Numbers are in. Humidity still high, 90%. Wind from the east, southeast at 3. 68 degrees at 10 past 8. The Morning Show with Greg Berg up next.
Support for WGTD's Morning Show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenosians who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional Morning Show co-host. And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio, the 5th of July. I'm Gregory Berg. We always look forward to an annual visit from Linda Guy, who is twice past president and publicist for the Four Seasons Garden Club here in Kenosha. And every summer in early July, they have the Secret Garden Walk, in which anybody in the community has the opportunity to step into private gardens, not gardens that are private in the sense of being guarded from the public, but that are shielded from simple, easy public view. And in some cases, very much private gardens that in which people are not welcome to just wander through at their leisure. But during the Secret Garden Walk, you are, in fact, welcome to actually step right into these gardens and to see them up close. And the next Secret Garden Walk is coming up this Saturday, and it includes kind of a special bonus garden that we want to spend some time talking about as well, the Down-to-Earth Community Garden, a garden plot rental community which was established a couple of years ago, in which people who do not have garden plots of their own can have a little plot of land on which they can grow vegetables to feed themselves and their families. And we have the founder of the Down to Earth Community Garden, Carol Selesky, with us as well. And again, this community garden is part of the Secret Garden Tour that is coming up this Saturday. Linda Guy and Carol Selesky, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. Always happy to be here.
Good to have both of you here. Linda, give us a little sense of history. I know you've been part of the Secret Garden project for a few years now. When did the first one occur, and what can you tell us about what sort of prompted the creation of this wonderful event?
Our history is a little fuzzy, Greg, but as near as we can tell, this has been going on for, this should be our 16th year. And like any project like this, it started small, it started casual, it started with good intent by well-meaning people, but it took a while to really develop as a very organized project. I pointed out to the membership a couple of weeks ago that for at least 6 months out of the year, we're running a small business here. Mm. We have our product, we have our vendors, we have our ticket agents and such, and it's very much a coordination effort over the years, which has kind of fallen into or been formed into a quite a popular event in the community. People do look forward to it now.
Absolutely. And tell us just a little bit about how these particular gardens find their way into the tour. It sounds like that's kind of a varied story.
It very much is. I think the majority of our gardens find us, or the homeowners, find us via word of mouth. We have about 35 members in the garden club. They're always on the lookout. You may drive past a place that, oh, hey, that's interesting, you know, has a lovely front garden. You don't know what's in the backyard. And the whole point of this tour is to take a peek into those lovely backyards. So you may know somebody who knows somebody who talks about somebody, et cetera, et cetera. And then also there are people who do come to us. We always have sign-up sheets available at the garden walk. And occasionally there's somebody who looks around and says, I can do that. And actually one of our primary gardens on the tour this year was someone who signed up last year. He's been a regular on the garden walks over the years, and he felt he was ready now. So we had his name on the sign up sheet, and that was one of the first gardens that we signed on this year on the far north side of Kenosha.
We should probably mention that as well, that generally speaking, what happens is that we are talking about a particular part of town, so people aren't driving miles and miles and miles to manage
exactly.
to visit all the gardens.
In those 15, 16 years, that's something that we learned. And the selection of the gardens these days is very logistics-driven, driving being the key word there. People want to spend their time looking at gardens. They don't want to spend their time driving from one end of the city to the other. So we have worked very hard in the past few years to keep the gardens in as close proximity as possible. We bill it as a garden walk, and we love it when you can actually walk from garden one to garden two and then around the block to garden three and such. It doesn't always work out quite that convenient, but if we can at least, you know, center on one particular part of town, it does make it easier for our guests.
Right. And it's not the same part of town year after year after year, but
not at all. Over the years I don't know what the mindset is, but we get more gardeners coming to us from the south side, from Pleasant Prairie and I would say, you know, south of 60th Street. and west. We've done a number of gardens out in the River Oaks area. But Northside has not always been that easily accessible for us. This year we were very fortunate. Hmm. So we are here on the very far north side.
And tell us a word about how the community garden came to be part of this, and we'll bring Carol in just a moment. But from your point of view, how did this occur?
Well, we've done this on a couple of occasions with other community gardens of different descriptions, not necessarily the produce driven garden that that Down to Earth is, but we've done suggested stops on the tour. We did a little community garden over in the Lincoln Park neighborhood. We have partnered on two different times. We have partnered with Gateway Horticultural Department, and they have involved their students, they've involved their volunteers, and they've made a day of it for the community, just kind of opening up all of their facilities so people can see. A lot of what they had included in their part of the tour were areas that, yes, you can walk through most any time, but you can't walk through with somebody who can tell you what those plants are and right. How this came to be and what we're doing next year and that sort of thing. So we have partnered with Gateway a couple different times. Down to Earth Garden, being located actually just a stone's throw from your studio here, a lot of people drive by there. A lot of people wonder what's going on. Carol is a longtime friend of the garden club, and it seemed to be kind of a natural that we could, through our event, get the word out on their efforts and their mission, and it gives us a little more variety on our tour.
Mm-hmm. So. Sounds like a win-win. Carol, I suspect this was an invitation that you very much welcome to help spread the word about the Down to Earth Community Garden.
Yes, we're very happy that we got the opportunity to partner with the Four Seasons Garden Club to open our gardens for the public, because normally we're a fenced-in lot.
So in a sense, the gates open up on Saturday.
The gates will be open, definitely, so people can come in and walk around. Take a look at what everybody's growing. We have 110 garden plots. I have over 70 gardeners, and we have some wonderful things growing.
And it's interesting, you don't maybe immediately think of a vegetable garden as this thing of beauty to be enjoyed aesthetically, and yet there's something really beautiful about a really beautifully manicured vegetable garden. It is worth seeing, and especially seeing up close. Say a word about the creation of this. It was pretty much your idea, I understand. What prompted you to pursue the creation of the Down to Earth Community Garden? What need was it filling?
About 5 years ago, I was looking for to start a place where people had the opportunity to garden. And we came up with several ideas, and the community garden was the logical choice for us. Well, for me, it was just by myself. And I brought on a couple people that were interested in garden. The co-founder, Shannon McBride, she's from Kenosha, too. Her and I put our heads together, and we started looking for property in Kenosha. And we were very lucky to have the Moose Lodge offer an acre to us. And they weren't going to charge us. And they just said, here, you know, you can use this property and do what you want. And so I sat down. I'm a landscape designer, so I sat down and I drew out a plan, and then we started working on it. And it took us one season to get things together, to get funds, to get it going, because there's no model really for a community garden, so we had to kind of bump along and figure out how things were built. And we started out with the half an acre, and we thought, well, if we can fill this up, we had like 40 gardens. I said, that would be really great. And then the first season in 2014, it filled up right away. And I was like, oh, well, maybe we can expand to an acre. And so we created an acre. We have three different size plots. We have 4x8s for beginners, 10x12s, and 20x20s for the more experienced gardener. And we sell out just about every season. And it's just, it's been a wonderful experience. The people we meet, from young people to older people, there are some people out there every day, and they just love to garden. And it's been a great giving back to the community, because we actually have a gardening organization. We have a non-for-profit 501(c), and we're run totally by volunteers. And we're giving back to the community. We're giving people opportunities to garden, where normally we have people who live in apartments. We have people who live Racine, Burlington, that come here. Older people that just find it easier to come and just garden and not have to deal with a lawn maintenance type of thing. And yeah, it's just been a really, really fun project. It's a business, and we work hard at it. But in the meantime, it's giving so much back that we just really are happy with the results.
That's great. And I'd be anxious to hear more about kind of the specific layout of plots and this and that. And I should say, I drive up and down 30th Avenue at least twice every single day, and it's hardly ever that I see those garden plots devoid of activity. I mean, almost always there is somebody at some point in time that's doing something, except maybe in a pouring rain, but even then you sometimes see some action there. How many gardens did you say are part of the community garden this season?
We have 110 garden plots.
Wow. So a lot to see. Exciting. we'll get back and hear some more details in just a moment. For those of you just joining us, we are talking today about the upcoming Four Seasons Garden Club Secret Garden Walk, which is this Saturday, the 8th of July, from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. Rain or shine, the brochure says, and right now it looks like mostly sunshine.
We're expecting shine this year, and we're looking forward to it.
Right. Well, and it feels like over the years you've had very good fortune when it's come to weather.
We have. We've had very good luck with weather. There was a spell there, I don't know, 3-4 years in a row, where it seemed like you could figure out which was going to be the hottest day of the summer by determining what day the garden walk was being held. Mm. We just weren't able to avoid the sweltering conditions. And then the last couple of years, it's been a little bit more temperate. We've had, in my memory, we've had 2 days that did have some rain, a little, you know, light drizzle on and off, but so far we've been very, very fortunate. And I, you know, of course, 2 weeks out, I start, you know, looking at the weather report, you know, with even more interest, and it's in our favor this year.
Yeah, it's looking like it's going to be a beautiful day for this event. So let's talk about each of these individual gardens that are going to be part of it. And one of the things that jumped out at me was, you know, we often think about sort of master gardeners who've been experts at this for decades. And I can think of a couple of gardens you have this year in which that seems not to be the case, that these are people who just sort of almost in spite of themselves find themselves devoting themselves to their gardens more and more, and sort of surprising themselves with this gift that they didn't even know they had.
Exactly. The accidental gardeners. Yeah. Yes. We have a couple of those on our tour this year. All of the homes on the tour, the gardens are maintained by the homeowners. In some cases, there may have been some design influence by professional landscapers going in, but once those bones are set, once the basic design is established, these are all maintained and continued by the individual homeowners.
Right. So these are not zillionaires who have their own gardening staff. crafts.
We don't allow jillionaires under any circumstances. Right.
So let's talk about these gardens. Let's begin with the one by the Shumways. What are we going to enjoy there?
Well, I did when I wrote up the welcome comments at the at the opening of the ticket guidebook here. I did kind of a little thumbnail of each of the. Each of the gardeners this year, just a single sentence on what I thought kind of summed up what they were offering. And this is one of our gardeners who, he's an innovative gardener who never planned to be a gardener, but now the plans just keep on coming. This is a gentleman who, when they moved into their house, he was just looking for an easy way to maintain the lawn and garden. They had little kids at the time. And just maintaining a landscape can be time-consuming. So he kind of cut down on the grass by putting in some planted areas. That was one of his solutions. Well, he got very interested in those plantings and the different plants that were doing well. And invariably, these gardens are also... success. They're success stories, but you can trace your. Well, we won't use the word failure. Let's use the word challenges.
Right, reversals
along the way. So he found himself getting more and more interested in the development of this garden, and he has a little bit of everything now. He's got sun, he's got shade, he's got a vegetable garden, and his latest project, he's gotten into aquaponics. And aquaponics is basically marrying the relationship between your fish tank and your garden. The fish tank is providing nutrients for new seed sprouting and such. This is something that he does inside the home over the winter, The fish are creating the nutrient rich water that's going to water the new plants. The plants are feeding the fish. There's a symbiotic relationship there, and everybody's happy, including the gardener.
Interesting. And so, I suspect he will. Most of these gardeners are. Wait, are they all on hand?
We encourage them to be there. Every once in a while, we run into one who's shy, but all of our gardeners will be there on site to answer questions and maybe ask a few questions. Yeah. Invariably, there's a plant that, and we all do this. You wander through a garden center and you think, oh my gosh, that's gorgeous. I want one of those. And it looks like it'll do well in my environment. And you plant it and then you throw the tag away. And 3 years later, you got no idea what you've got.
Right.
So anyway, there are invariably, questions like that go back and forth because the attendants on the walk, our guests, range anywhere from, you said, very, very much novice gardens to master gardeners and people with years and years of experience. So there's a lot of interchange of information. The homeowner can find out a little bit about some plants that he's wondered about, based on the knowledge that the guests bring with them. And the guests are always learning something from the homeowner. It goes both ways.
Very good. So that sounds like a wonderful garden. I was going to say good way to start, but we should hasten to add that they are in a particular order in your booklet, but that doesn't mean you start with particular garden.
No, just for identification purposes, and we do have a map on the back, they are identified by number. That does not mean you need to explore the gardens in that particular order. You don't have to do all the gardens. This is entirely self-guided. If you want to cherry pick one or two because of time limitations, you've got descriptions in the book that gives you an idea of what to expect, and if something in particular piques your interest, you can head for that garden and include a couple more. You can do the whole tour front to back, front back to front, in whatever order you choose. We've, again, logistically speaking, we've tried to create some kind of a logical flow in the the numerical system that we have to identify them. So it might make sense in terms of travel and getting directly from one to another to take them in the order that we've presented, but no rules here.
Let's talk about the second garden in your booklet, which focuses mostly on conifers.
Exactly.
So this is going to be something a little out of the ordinary.
It is. And we've, you know, for years we've said we offer something for everybody. And if you are into conifers, or to the lay audience, we're talking evergreens here. This is a gentleman who, this is his passion. He loves conifers. He has quite a collection of them. He has a number of them are of the dwarf variety, miniature conifers, and that is the basis of his garden. And to be perfectly honest, we've been dogging this guy for years to be on the garden walk. And he didn't feel it was quite ready, and he has agreed this year to open the garden and let everybody else see the treasure that we knew was behind the gates for years and years. But this has been a project of love for him for so many years that he's now at a point that he does want to share it with the public, and we thank him for that. Like
That's
I said,
great.
We've been calling him the conifer guy for years, and he would not be offended by that description.
Right. So. Very good. I want to make sure when it comes to the third garden that I get to find out what in the world Johnny Jump-Ups are, because that's something that this gardener mentions in describing her wonderfully varied garden.
Well, this is, in fact, you and I had a brief conversation about this earlier. This is a gardener who has been on the tour before, but this garden has not been on the tour. She had a home in Pleasant Prairie, and has since downsized and moved to the north side of Kenosha, moved into a place that was virtually a blank canvas, and was able to start the garden that she'd always wanted from bare bones on up. It's a wonderful exhibition of what can be done in a mere 3 years' time. We saw this this space 2 years ago when she had laid out some hardscape. She'd laid out you could see the basic bones where it was going to go, but there were very few plantings. So in 3 years since she's moved into the home, she has a very beautifully established garden. It's, you know, there are plants that will still fill in. It'll be more lush. It'll, you know, it has a great future ahead of it. But for those people who are beginning gardeners, this is what you should do. She, you know, start as she did with the hardscape and the basic design, and then build on it from there. The Johnny Jump-Ups that you mentioned, that was something that she brought with her, that had an emotional tie with grandchildren and such.
Right.
And they're like little tiny pansies.
Oh, okay.
And they do jump up here and there where you least expect them. But these, she did intend to bring them along with her.
So
they weren't volunteers.
So there's a number of things that she's brought with her to this brand new garden. And she writes, most importantly, my Johnny Jump-Ups that were gifts from each of my three children when they were in kindergarten.
Oh, it was the children. Okay, so this goes back quite a ways.
Yeah. So this is kind of underscores how a garden can be very meaningful on lots of different levels for the gardener.
What her children gave her back then will be enjoyed by her grandchildren now. So it's, you know, there's a lot of stories like that about gardens that have been maintained over the years with mom's this and grandma's that.
Right.
And, you know, don't forget about the bleeding hearts from Aunt Essie's garden.
Right. And the next garden, the main point you make about this, now this is not someone whose garden is moved, but nevertheless that it's sort of forever transforming, and it's sort of the idea that that many gardens never ever achieve sort of a finished final state.
Exactly. This is our largest garden, and some people may remember it from the tour. I believe it was in 2014. This garden was on the tour before. That was one of those rare occasions where we had rain. So a lot of people didn't get a chance to see this garden on that tour, and they missed a wonderful opportunity because this is well, I put it in quotes in my description, a retired landscaper who just can't keep his hands out of the dirt. When we saw the garden three years ago, he had an acre and a half. He, too, had flower gardens, a huge vegetable garden. But the fascinating part about his landscape was at the rear of his garden, he has a prairie. He's established a little, I mean, it looks like a little chunk of Chiwaukee prairie that has been magically transported to the north side of Kenosha. And at this time of year, those grasses and prairie plants have grown to a height where once you enter this prairie, and he's got paths cut through it so that you can actually tour, and you become a part of the prairie. You can't see out. It's like, you know, like one of those corn mazes, except more of the natural variety.
So
that was a feature that that we'd love to have back. But beyond that, he's added another half acre. And the description in the book there talks about, you know, some of the things he's doing with that half acre. So again, retired? Not really.
Yeah, right.
So there's always something. There's always a new challenge, and that's one thing that we're showing off there. The next two gardeners on your list, these are more city gardens. They don't have acres of space. The next one in the numerical order here, this is another kind of one of our accidental gardeners. Yes, she started growing some flowers. Yes, she started growing some vegetables. And now the two concepts have kind of mingled. You can be looking at what you think is a flower garden and you know, there. Oh, wait a minute. There's herbs in there. Oh, but you know, here's the eggplant, and she's kind of combined the two concepts, and to a bit of an accidental gardener.
I guess that's part of what she means in her summary when she says she wanted this garden to be both practical and beautiful, paying little attention to typical garden rules.
Exactly. Yes, no rules, and it has worked beautifully for her. It's not a huge space, and this is one way to deal with a smaller space. You don't have to segregate, you know, the tomatoes over, you know, behind the shed. They can be just as lovely and decorative as your dahlias. So this is a gardener who's found a way to make that work. And then the last home on the tour, or it may be the first on your tour, as you choose. This gardener is actually a member of the club, and it's really rare that we have a club member included on the tour. But every once in a while, we do have a member whose garden is included. This is someone who. For years and years, while they were raising kids and you know, had other priorities, the backyard was it was sandboxes, it was swing sets, it was space for the dogs and that sort of thing. After the children have moved out on their own, they've transformed this into more of a space for grown-ups. And she's been able to indulge her crafty side, her fascination with recycled found objects, that sort of thing, and used a lot of vintage pieces as garden decor. and work them in seamlessly with a lovely, welcoming, perfect for entertaining sort of environment.
Hmm. One of the things that jumped out at me was that she was so glad that she elected to get some professional advice. And of course, she did that, obviously having no aspirations for this is going to be an award-winning garden. I mean, fairly modest expectations or aspirations, but nevertheless, it made sense to her to get somebody in there who really knows this business and can and could advise her accordingly. And that, it sounds like it's the best thing she ever did.
That can be a very smart starting place for novice gardeners. If you've got the wherewithal to get some professional advice going in, and that professional advice usually comes in all degrees, a consultation, have a master plan drawn up. You can take that as far as you choose to or as far as your budget will allow. But if you're a startup gardener, that can set the, I used the phrase, the bones before. If you got, it's like anything, if you got good bones to build on, whether it's your home or,
right.
or your wardrobe,
a good framework.
Or
yeah,
whatever.
Right. Yeah, good framework.
A good framework, and the professional landscapers can get you started on that path. The ideal scenario then is you take it and you run with it, and that's exactly what she's done. And there are a lot of people who take that path initially and then discover they have a newfound love, that they want to get in there and dig in the dirt, and they want to make the decisions and select the plants. And the lady says she was bitten by the gardening bug, and so she's maintained this on her own since then.
Hmm. That's a really nice array of private gardens, and of course that's something you always work for, I know, is to let each one be its own sort of unique little adventure, and you put them all together and you get something really, really wonderful.
Exactly.
This is a monthly test of the Southeast and South Central Wisconsin Emergency Alert System. In the event of an emergency, this system would bring you important information. This test is now concluded.
Okay, as we were saying.
Before we were so rudely interrupted.
Right. Nothing personal. But yeah, so it's a wonderful variety. No two gardens are exactly the same, and it adds up to something really wonderful.
And that is one of our goals every year. I mean, we realize that there's all different levels of gardeners that come on this tour, and we don't want to overwhelm people by throwing 2 acres at every. No, you're not expected to have that kind of involvement. And but there's always an idea or two that you can walk away with. Whether you do have a huge amount of space to deal with, or whether you're living in a condo with a couple of pots on the balcony, there will be some idea that you can pick up from one of these homeowners, one of the gardeners. I know, I have gotten so into mixed planters, not. And throwing unexpected things together in a mixed planter, and those were ideas that that I have picked up along the way for one particular homeowner. I can remember seeing things I never would have thought to put those two together. And look at that. That's fabulous. And so it's you can always come away with something, no matter as a guest on this tour, no matter what your level of gardening expertise is, no matter what your home situation is, there's something that you can take away from this.
Very good. Carol Selesky, let's find out a little more about the Down to Earth Community Garden, which is also part of this year's event, and that's going to be such a neat opportunity for people to kind of see this up close. Again, it's not quite so private in the way that some of these other gardens are, really sort of shut away from easy view, and yet, as you said, this is a gated garden, so to speak, and so the general public does not get to walk through this and see it up close, and they do have that opportunity on Saturday. Give us some sense of the kind of people who have taken advantage of the down-to-earth community garden. I mean, rented a plot and done this. Are we talking mostly about people who have otherwise never gardened before and are doing this for the first time, or is it more often people that once gardened but now find themselves in a place where that's no longer possible, or is it a little of both?
It's actually, there's so many different scenarios. We get people who call and said, I've never started a garden before. What do I do? How do I do it? Where do I start? So we usually advise them to take the 4x8, which is the small beginner garden. And you can plant a couple tomatoes, some lettuce, onions, some carrots in there. And it ranges from, we get families who come in and start with the 4x8s, and then the next year they'll actually go, oh, I want the bigger garden, so they'll go to the 10x12. The 10x12 is a nice size garden because it's kind of like your normal backyard size garden. It's enough where your family can have things to grow. Some people come in and they're avid gardeners, and they go, I want a can. And so they just plant all tomatoes. So they'll have like 50 tomato plants.
Yeah.
And they'll take all those tomatoes and they'll can them and they'll freeze them and they'll do a lot of different things with them. And then we'll get the experienced gardener take the 20x20, which is a really big piece, and they usually have large families. They've been gardening for years, and it runs the range from, I have some younger people, and then I have some senior citizens that come in, and they all just seem really excited about gardening, and there's a lot of different things they can do. In our bigger plots, you can grow corn, where the smaller ones, we don't allow it because it's too tall and too much shade. But they'll have a whole range of, they'll have rows and rows of cabbage and corn and beans, and that's enough for themselves and to give to their friends and family. So it's just, there's a lot of different people out there. The senior citizens bring their grandchildren, teach them how to garden. And we're always there to answer questions. I mean, we volunteer and we take care of it. Usually we're there on Saturday morning. So if people have questions, they'll come and they'll ask us questions, or they'll text me or they'll call me and say, you know, I have this problem. What can I do? But a lot of them, it seems to be, it's a community. So they'll see each other out there. They'll talk about their gardens. There's some people that are out there all the time that are, they know their bugs. They know their pests. They know the diseases. And they rely on the people out there. And it's a big community. So they all get to know each other. And it's just a really wonderful thing to see all the interaction out there.
Very good. Is any of the work already done? I mean, like, for instance, is the soil turned over by somebody else, or essentially is each gardener responsible for their garden from the very start to the very end?
They are responsible from the beginning to the end. So it was a farm field. We have stakes around it. We have landscaped walkways so it doesn't get muddy. There's mulch over it, but that's their plot of land. So whether they choose to have somebody to rototill it, we do have somebody that comes in for a price and will rototill your plot. Some people, like me, I like to turn it over by hand. And some people do permaculture where you don't turn it over at all, and they just build on it year after year. We have gardeners coming back that have been there the whole 4 years, and their plot is really wonderful. We have some people, we call their gardens the land of the giants, because their cabbages are like huge, and their vegetables are wonderful, and they bring in a lot of compost, and they have their special mixes and their special sprays, because it is all organic. We don't allow any fertilizers or chemicals in there unless they are organic, and people do a wonderful job, but it's a learning process. Sometimes we'll plant things and they'll die, and we'll just be like, just keep trying, you know, and do something different. So it's fun.
So is the entire area, is it 1 acre, I think you said, is completely occupied this year?
Just about. I have a couple 4x8s left. But besides that, we're done usually June 1st renting, because after that time, it gets a little late. And then if somebody needs to rototill and then put compost in, you know, it's just a long process. So we hope people would by June 1st already have rented their garden. So we have a couple 4x8s, but that's okay. We tarp them over. We try to keep the weeds down. And just, you know, that's fine. Out of 110, if we only have a couple 4x8s, we're really, really happy.
Well, right. And obviously this has taken off like wildfire and done very, very well. If people want more information, and also if they are interested particularly in trying to get something, some space rented for next year. Is there a website they're supposed to go to, or how do you, typically do they make contact with you?
Sure. We have the applications and all the information about the community garden on our website, which is downtoearthkenosha.org. I also have applications at the community garden in an information box. We start renting to the public November 15th. Our renewals for our gardeners are from September through November. So if they want the same plot, they reserve ahead of time. And then the applications, we take them through November. We try and say May 1st is the cutoff, but we usually, the weather has been kind of cold in the spring, so we'll extend it till June if it's not good weather.
Right. And real quick, is it just kind of a first come, first serve, or is there something else involved in this application process?
No, it's first come, first serve. So the sooner you get your application in, the sooner that you'll know that you'll have a plot next year, because the bigger plots, the 20 by 20s, they're usually sold out by December or rented out by December because it's seasonal. So
right. Very good. Well, people can come see the down-to-earth community garden up close and personal as it is part of the Secret Garden Walk this Saturday by the Four Seasons Garden Club. Linda, I know real quick you have a little bit of information you still want to share.
Oh, just the basics. This is a fundraiser, and just some of the causes that we've supported in the last year or so are the scholarships for any Kenosha County horticulture students, the Margaret Meyer Garden down at the lakefront at Kemper Center, land preservation at Chewaukee Prairie, Arbor Day, Earth Day plantings, public library horticulture book collection. We've worked with a couple of schools this year, Wilson Elementary School, Garden Club, Hillcrest School, Arboretum, the St. Matthew's Lakefront Elder Garden, and Down to Earth Community Garden are all some of the causes that these funds go to support. And I also have to mention the fact that at every home on the tour, there is a raffle for a planter, a lovely, quite large planters usually, that are donated by a number of local greenhouses and garden centers, Steins, Milliger's, Burr Oaks. Oh, I know I'm going to forget somebody. Anton's.
We get the idea.
Yeah, we've got the whole list there.
That's great. And where do people buy tickets?
Okay, tickets are available at a number of ticket outlets in the area, and I'm going to go through the list pretty rapidly here. We've got Andrea's, Sunnyside Florist and Gifts, Summer's Garden Florist, Stein's, the Kenosha location, Anton's Greenhouses,